That you're here today. Sorry on the last time. Our light system, it just seemed got all sorts of weird. I don't want you to think that was like our ghetto version of a light show or something, but I was like, what in the world is going on? So, but yeah, you know, just a little added flavor for you this morning. as they pass the offering bags, I want to let you know about something that's coming up. Probably earlier this year, we made a list of about 12 or 15 different speakers and communicators that we'd love to kind of come speak to our community. And we do this time from time. We have guest speakers that come in, whether we do it live and in person or whether we do it via video, because we just, man, there's so many really great voices about who's communicating, what God is up to in our lives and up in the world all around. And so we want you guys to hear and participate in that. And so one of those names was a woman named Margaret Feinberg. And so coming up on November 12th, we're going to be hosting her here at a conference. We're just calling it a Hearing from God conference. And she'll be here November 12th. It's a Saturday. It'll be from 9 till about 12:15. And she's going to teach through three different sessions on trying to just figure out what's it look like to, hear from God. And not in some kind of freaky kind of way, you know, but like in a normal interactive relationship with God, mystical way. What's that look like? And that's something all of us, we want to know. We want to try to figure out more of that. Of how do we discern God's voice in each area of my life? How can I begin to separate, you know, the voices in my just head and normal thought processes from what is actually God? And so we're going to create some other interactive kind of environments that give you some space to just go pause and relax and be. And so we've tried to remove as many obstacles as we can. And so we underwrote most all the costs for it. And so it's only going to cost you $5 to come. And you can pass that along to any of your friends too, and other churches, any other people that you know that they want to come here and participate in that conference with us. But it'll be here at Cross Point on November 12th from 9 to about, like I said, 12:15. You can go to our website, www.crosspoint.org. And there's a link on there, Hearing God Conference. You just click on it. It'll take you to a registration form, make it real easy for you, and do that. But Margaret's great. She's probably written about 12, 14 different books. I think I've read probably at least half of them. And I really appreciate her through the years. She's spoken through all different types of conferences and places all over the country. And even one popular ministry magazine named her one of the 30 leading voices that will help shape the church over the next decade. And so just a great lady. So I'm really excited for you to get to spend some time with her, get to know her a little bit, and for her to hang out with us over that weekend. So was thinking this past few weeks, kind of reflecting on this reality that kind of exists in our home with my wife, Adrienne, and I. Where we tend to put our two boys, we have two boys ages 7 and 9, and they tend to go to bed somewhere around, you know, between 8 and 8:30 every night. And this kind of mentality that's kind of happened where once 8:30 comes and we kind of go through our routine and we'll, you know, get our kids in bed and we read a story and then we read a story from the Bible and then we pray together. And then we kind of close their door. They read for a few minutes on their own, and then we go downstairs. But what we've begun to realize is that once we kind of land on the couch downstairs, because their room's upstairs, we kind of turn the parenting switch off. You know, like we're no longer parents at that point. And so we kind of check out mentally a little bit on our own. And so we'll sit there for about 30 minutes and kind of veg out, whether it's on an iPhone or a laptop or watching some sports. And it's like 30 minutes just to kind of decompress from a long day. And so up to that point, before 8:30, now we can, you know, we don't do this perfectly all the time, but, you know, we're trying to engage with our kids and we've got dinner conversation and laughing and playing and doing whatever, you know, you just do in the evening. And I'm great with questions. I'm great with all sorts of questions that they may have. But once 8:30 comes and we shut that door and we walk downstairs, it's like, you don't bother me anymore. And I don't know what it is, but they can come down the stairs at 8:35, and if I'm sitting on the couch after we've already done the bedtime routine, there's a level of annoyance and frustration that goes really, really high, because I'm like, no, this is mom and dad time, and I don't need to hear any more questions. And so I don't know. I'm not saying that's right. That's just kind of how we roll in our home. And so we were a few weeks ago. There was this series of storms. I don't know if you remember. And I love storms. I love when, you know, just listening to rain. I love when lightning lights up the sky and look at all that. But come to find out, my kids don't like storms very much. As evidenced by that, during one of these nights, they just, after bedtime, they just kept coming down the stairs over and over again. And I find myself getting incredibly annoyed and frustrated, where I'm like, what in the world is going on? And they just said, you know, what if lightning strikes our house? Is our house going to burn down? And what if lightning hits a tree and it falls on us and we all die? And don't you think, you know, all this stuff. And they start going through all these scenarios. And I'm just so frustrated. I'm like, just go back upstairs and go to bed. Everything is fine. Our house is going to be fine. You're going to be fine. Just go to sleep. They come back downstairs again 5 minutes later and they're nervous and they're scared. And they're like, please, can we just sit down here with you for a little while? And I'm like, no, what do you want me to do? Do you want me to put a clown puppet at the end of your bed? Will that help? You know, I don't know. For the Poltergeist fans, you know, you can get that. I don't know. What do you want me to do? I'll try to be as helpful as I possibly can. And so, but I'm just frustrated. I'm annoyed at that point. And so finally, they got back upstairs, and I'm sitting there, and this picture came in my head all of a sudden, where this very vivid image, and I hadn't remembered it in a long time, of me when I was about a similar age, of going into my closet during a storm in my room, and I would tuck my knees up into my chest. And I remember sitting there for hours, just shivering, so, so scared. You know, I was so scared that we had this huge oak tree right outside my window, that lightning was going to strike, it was going to fall on me and kill everybody, or this, you know, I'd seen Wizard of Oz many times, and so I knew what the tornadoes were going to do, and storms, and all that kind of stuff flying around. So I was nervous, and I was freaked out, and I remember sitting in my closet shaking. And so I sat there on my couch, and I was like, oh man, yeah, I know exactly what that feels like. And so I walked back upstairs and, you know, I asked my boys, I said, come over here and sit with me. And so we got on the corner of the bed and I put my arm around each of them. And I just said, hey, I need you to understand, one, I'm sorry. You know, I'm sorry I was getting frustrated. I'm sorry that I was acting a little bit annoyed because, you know, I know what it's like to be scared at storms. I get it. And when I was your age, I was petrified. I was terrified at storms. I said, the thing is, as I got older, what I realized was I wasted a whole lot of time in my life getting really worried and scared about storms and all sorts of things that I had absolutely no control over. And I realized that none of that worrying and none of that being scared did any good. It wasn't helpful. And so part of me trying to encourage you to go stop and just go up to your room and not worry about it is me trying not to have you waste all sorts of time and energy like I did, trying to be scared or afraid. But more importantly, what I want you to know is I get it. And so I'm sorry that I was kind of just, you know, short with you, because I understand. I understand what it's like. So a couple weeks later, I was unpacking this story to one of my mentors that I've kind of asked to speak into my life in terms of being a parent. And he said something to me that I thought was incredibly insightful. And he said, listen, because you got to understand that kids always love to hear stories about their parents. And he said, because here's the psychology that's going on behind that. It's when they hear something like your storm story, what they think is, well, okay, I'm 7 years old and I'm scared of storms. And my dad was 7 years old once and he was scared of storms too. And the connection that gets made is, well, I love and admire my dad and he's okay now. So you know what? I guess I'm going to be okay too. And there's incredible power in that. And stories are powerful that way, especially with kids. But even more powerful is the principle behind them and what that communicates. And at the root of that principle is an idea that we want to center teachings around for the next few weeks. And today is just going to serve more as an introduction to the series and more into an introduction of what we're going to dive into more over the next few weeks. But the idea revolves around two very powerful words that God can use to transform lives, that he uses to transform relationships, and that he uses to transform communities. But I also want you to understand that this is an idea that sits very much at the heart of our church here at Crosspoint. And it influences a lot of who we are and a lot of what we do. And it revolves around these two simple words, me too. Me too. Now, you may not have thought about it in those terms before or reflected on just how powerful that phrase is, but perhaps you know what it's like to experience it. Or if you've ever gathered up the courage to share with someone something like, you know what? There's just days where I just feel like a terrible, terrible mom. And another mom whom you've placed high on a pedestal, she says, me too. And there's this moment of relief when you suddenly start to realize that you're not alone anymore. Where are these insecurities that have condemned you for so long and you thinking that you're the only one? You're the only one who feels this way in your circle of friends. with the people that you admire the most. And then suddenly there's this moment of relief. Wow, somebody else feels the same way I do. Or maybe there's this moment of desperation where you finally said to somebody, you know what? I'm an alcoholic. And you experienced a person or a group of people like the ones who meet here every Wednesday night at AA. And one of them said, me too. Me too. And somehow you can't even fully explain it. But somehow those two words, that simple idea, made all the difference in the world. Perhaps you've walked around for years with serious doubts about God. And serious questions and hard questions about why things are the way they are with faith or why they are with the way things happen in the world. But questions never seem to be allowed with the Christians that you knew. And all you heard was just, well, you just got to believe. You just got to have faith. But then perhaps you encountered a follower of Jesus or you encountered a church who, rather than condemning your questions, what they said was, me too. You know what? I've got questions too. I've got doubts too. But let's not give up. Let's go search together. And somehow God used that attitude of me too in that person or in that particular church. Use that to spark this whole new beginning for you in your journey of faith. You see, there is tremendous freedom that can come. Tremendous freedom that comes when someone chooses to trust somebody and actually stops pretending and admits reality. When they're honest with where they're at, when they're honest with what they're doing or what they've been hiding or with how they feel, there's tremendous freedom when someone actually garners up the courage to admit it. And in a trusted circle of people, it takes so much courage to be the one who goes first, who leads the way when it comes to authenticity. But what I've discovered is that many times what's just as important for relational health, whether that's with a group of friends, whether that's with family, whether that's with any type of community, what's just as important is the person who has the courage to go second. Because while there is tremendous transforming power by being able to go first and to confess and admit and be authentic with how things really are, it carries with it just as much of a transformative power in the person who was willing to go second, when it's marked with a spirit of me too. You see, those two words can bring comfort. They can bring acceptance. They can bring hope. They can remove prisons of isolation that may have haunted people for years. Now, with all of that said, you need to understand that there's a wrong way to share me too. There's a way to share this idea of me too in such a way that it breeds toxicity in a relationship or in a group. For example, perhaps you walk into a room, maybe after a day at work, or maybe someone else comes home from work and you start to share, you know what, hey, I've had a rough day. And suddenly it seems your rough day gets dismissed and gets interrupted by, well, me too. Let me tell you about my day. And then suddenly the conversation gets hijacked and you find yourself in the middle of some kind of quasi-competition where the other person wants to make sure that your rough day doesn't anywhere compare to the rough day that they've had. But then the opposite can also happen, where maybe you find yourself genuinely excited. Maybe let's say about something that your kid did or something your kid achieved. And you find yourself in a close circle of friends and you share something like, you know what, man, you know, my little girl's had such kind of an up and down journey, but I'm just really proud of her. She got put in the advanced reader class in her preschool. And rather than someone celebrating that with you, their response becomes, oh, well, that's cute, but you know what? I'm really proud of my little girl this week because, you know, I mean, she's only 15 months old and she's already reading in English, Latin, Spanish, and Chinese. I mean, isn't she amazing? And you're just kind of like, well, pin the blue ribbon upon your chest, you know? And father of the year, parent of the year, kid of the year. Because now what it's done, it's not this circle of friends just trying to share, you know, a cool thing that's happened in your life where you don't feel like you can ever celebrate. Now it's become this competition. Now it's become, how do I one-up somebody else? Maybe not that you've experienced one of those times when tragedy strikes. Someone gets cancer. Someone that you love dies. And someone, albeit well-intentioned, they walk up to you as you're grieving and as you're trying to process this. And they say, you know what? Hey, I want you to know, I know exactly how you feel. And then they proceed to go on for the next 20 minutes telling you their story. telling you their experience, and they think that they're being helpful, but they're not. And it doesn't mean that there's never a time for that, but not in that moment, because you're like, you know what? I get it. I get that you may have had someone who got cancer or got cancer. I get that you may have lost a child or lost a dad, but you need to understand, you don't know exactly how I feel because you're not me. And this wasn't your diagnosis. This was my child. This was my dad. This was my friend. And there may come a time when I'd like to hear your story, but just don't assume that right now I want to hear it, and then you just automatically insert your story into mine. And so you need to understand, there's a wrong way. There's a wrong way to share Me Too. But that's not what I'm talking about. It's not what I'm talking about today. It's not what we're going to talk about for the next couple weeks. But instead, I'm talking about the kind of Me Too where you find yourself getting annoyed and frustrated at your kids. And you pause long enough to realize, wait, you know, that was me too. Doing the same kinds of things. Scared of the same types of things. Struggling with the same types of struggles. The same types of insecurities. And you go and you apologize. And you find yourself offering grace and acceptance and understanding. Much more than continuing to offer annoyance and condemnation. Instead, I'm talking about the kind that we've seen recently at our parenting conference and the Monday night parenting courses that have followed, where parents have been able to come together in this common environment and admit things like, you know what? I've been having a really hard time at this particular situation. And the community and the friendships that have formed from when another parent has simply said, hey, you know what? Me too. And we've heard beautiful stories of parents now that once felt isolated and overwhelmed. Now they're emailing one another, or they're talking to one another on the phone. They're meeting up at Starbucks with one another, and they're suddenly not alone anymore. Instead, I'm talking about that one person or that one group of people or this one category of people in your mind that you kind of label them. They just kind of fall under a broad banner of a category for you, and they've made choices or make choices that you don't agree with. And frankly, some of them, they've made choices that in your mind, you're pretty sure you don't think God agrees with either. And there's this temptation for you to condemn. There's this temptation for you to pound them with Bible verses. Doesn't matter if you rip them out of context or do that, you just can pound them with Bible verses. And yet here's what you and I both know. That never works. Ever. It never helps anything, or it never helps anybody take clicks in their journey with Jesus. Rather, what helps is when someone is willing to carry an attitude with them toward people of me too. Me too. I know what it's like to make choices that people don't agree with, and I know what it's like to make choices I'm pretty sure God doesn't agree with either. I've been there. Shoot, I'm still there in lots of ways. So listen, you don't have to get yourself all cleaned up first so that all your choices will meet with my approval. I just want to love you. Or perhaps someone has blown it. I mean, they've blown it big time. And it's tempting to think, you know, how dare they? And push them away and think, I would never, ever do such a thing. And there's this spirit of kind of disgust that starts to creep up in your heart toward them. And while you might not ever say it out loud, there's something in you that just starts to think you're kind of better than them. But instead, understand, an attitude of me too says, yeah, you know, maybe I haven't blown it in the same way that you did, but I've done my own share of hurtful and stupid and destructive things. I've done my own share of dark and selfish things. So I'll walk through this fire with you. I'll walk through this struggle with you. I'll walk through this addiction with you. I'll go to court with you. I'll sit on the couch with you. Because here's what I know, and here's what we all know when we actually reflect on it. We all know this intuitively. Any chances that you or I or someone else has to experience God's grace and experience God's love and experiencing God's transformative power in their life, any chance that someone has at that, those chances are drastically affected both up and down by whether someone is walking alone or whether we have someone who's willing to walk with us. It's drastically affected, the chances that someone has to experience God's love and grace in their life. And so as individuals seeking to know and to follow Jesus, And as a church community here at Crosspoint, seeking to do the very same thing, to know and to follow Jesus. What should be heard most isn't, well, you ought to, or you should. But rather at the heart of what should be communicated the most is me too. Me too. Now, please hear me on this. This doesn't mean that there's never a time for challenging or confronting toxic, sinful behavior, because there is. But it's always best done and most effectively done in the context of relationship, in the context of loving community. Someone standing on a street corner shouting and screaming at people they don't know, putting up some anonymous billboards or comments on a blog or on some news article or something. It's ridiculous that when people think, okay, that's really going to be helpful to people, that's really going to change people. All of us, we experience change or are open to change always in the context of loving community, in the context of relationship. And we say that a lot around here. But every time in the scriptures, it always says grace and truth. It's never truth then grace. It's always grace then truth. That if you don't lead with love, if you don't lead with grace, then no one ever cares to listen to the truth that you have to share. But that also doesn't mean that we or other people will listen to truth just when someone leads to grace. That doesn't mean that. Because we've all experienced that. There's times when we don't listen. But the chances are far greater for someone to be open to listening again, to be open to listening when you lead with grace, when you lead with love. Furthermore, just so that it gets said and so that I'm clear, it also doesn't mean that there aren't time for boundaries. That when someone keeps making destructive choices over and over again, that physical, emotional, and relational boundaries don't become necessary. And yet, understand how those boundaries get communicated and how those boundaries get established is greatly affected by whether one carries an attitude in their heart of disgust and condemnation, or whether the attitude in their heart is marked by humility and a spirit of, me too, me too. Look at Paul. He's a follower of Jesus. He penned most of the New Testament. And look at what he writes in the book of Galatians chapter 6. He says, live creatively, friends. If someone falls into sin, forgivingly restore him, saving your critical comments for yourself. You might be needing forgiveness before the day's out. Stoop down and reach out to those who are oppressed. Share their burdens and so complete Christ's law. If you think you are too good for that, you are badly deceived. Make a careful exploration of who you are and the work you have been given, and then sink yourself into that. Don't be impressed with yourself. Don't compare yourself with others. So here's what I want to do, kind of with the remainder of our time, is I want to try to give us some handles in terms of how we begin to let Jesus shape this heart in us, this attitude of me too. Because you need to understand, Jesus carried with him an attitude of me too. It's how Jesus lived and it's how Jesus lives. After all, Jesus's very name means Emmanuel, God with us. Jesus, at his very essence, who he is, was not someone who came to stand opposed to us, was not someone who came to stand against us. Rather, he was someone who came to enter into our mess, to enter into our junk, who was willing to take it on, who was not afraid to get dirty, to walk with us. Not standing in opposition to us, pointing fingers, offering a spirit of condemnation. Rather, he wanted to walk with us. Jesus, Emmanuel, God with us. So I want to just give you a few reminders. This is not new information for any of us. These are just reminders that we all need from time to time to remember, okay, what do I have to keep reminding myself to do if I want to be this type of person, if I want to live and embody the way of Jesus and represent him in the world? The first one is that we have to learn how to listen. And we have to learn how to listen. You see, we've got to pay attention to people's context. We've got to take the time to be willing to listen to someone's story, because we all want that. Each of us want that. When stuff flies out of our mouth, when we do certain things or make certain decisions or choices or have certain patterns of behavior, we want people in our life to understand and take into account, well, you need to understand my context. You need to understand how I grew up. You need to understand, you know, what's happened to me and blah, 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 blah. We want people to look past just what we say or what we do, and we want people to try to understand our context. We want them to try to understand our intent. And we've got to be the kind of people that listen long enough to hear people's stories. That we would listen and we would be able to start to discern, you know what? If I had gone through the abuse that you had, if I had gone through the physical and the verbal beatings that you took, if I had gone through the neglect you experienced, if I had seen the things you'd seen, or if I had experienced the trauma you experienced, you know what? If I put all those factors into my own mix, I don't know if I wouldn't have made similar choices as you. You see, there's a humility in that that doesn't stand in a spirit of condemnation and judgment. It's one that takes into account context. Now, it doesn't justify behavior. It doesn't justify decisions. But seeking to understand changes so much of our perspective on people. Of paying attention to their context allows us to actually be able to love them. You see, something we got to get is that going second doesn't always mean I get it. Going second doesn't always mean, you know what, I've experienced it. Going second many times means I want to get it. I want to get it. And many times part of listening is being willing to do the hard work of reflecting and discerning what someone's context even just could be. There might be some people that you never have the opportunity to hear their story. You may never have the opportunity to sit down and to hear what they've been through and what they've gone through. It may be a category of people for you. Maybe it's someone you just see on a television screen or someone you just hear about or know about, groups or categories. That as people seeking to follow Jesus, that you would do the hard work of praying and reflecting and saying, what would drive someone to make those types of choices and decisions? Before I sit there and stand in judgment and point fingers and have this, wow, I'm way better than you. I can't believe you do this. The spirit of disgust, all those kind of things. What would drive someone to make those types of decisions? What would drive someone to be that desperate? And to put ourselves in a position where we want to listen. I want to listen to what that context could be, because then when we do that, it frees us to actually love. Second thing is we got to figure out what it looks like to make it safe for people. How do you make it safe? How do you carry an attitude with you in your life of people that can be, you know what? Nothing you can do to get me off your team. Nothing. Nothing you can do to get me off your team. Nothing you can say, nothing you can do. You can't get me off your team. There's safety in that. But you see, we kind of live in a culture that no one really wants to tell people their secrets because they're pretty sure that if they do, then condemnation is just going to follow. And often what people have done is they've spent enough time beating themselves up already for the secrets that they hold inside. And you know what this is like. Some of you, you've held secrets inside for such a long time. And you beat yourself up for those secrets every single day. And you think, why would I ever want to share those? Why would I ever want to find a trusted person to share that with? Because you know what? They're just going to beat me up some more. So it stays secret. And everybody pretends to be, oh, everything's, you know, let's be open and honest and authentic. But you're like, why would I? And understand, many times the reason that people feel that way, especially among Christians, especially in a church, is because of what they've experienced before. That it's kind of this understood expectation in many churches that what you do is you pretend in church. You put on the happy face. You pretend like everything's okay. Oh, let's all be authentic. But no one really is. And that people's experience many times is it's not safe to say, this is how I really feel. It's not safe to say, this is what I'm struggling with. It's not safe to share what you've done or what you've been through. Because if you do, then you're going to get shunned. If you do, you're going to get isolated. If you do, you're going to get this scarlet letter placed on you. If you actually share what you're struggling with, well, then you get isolated. You get kicked out. So it's better just to kind of keep the game going. And so you got to understand that one of the greatest gifts you can give people in your life, and one of the greatest gifts that we can give people as a church community together, is we've got to make it safe. Got to make it safe. And that the people in your life understand that you don't love ideas more than you actually love them. That the people in your life, and as a church, that we have to make sure that people understand that we don't love principles more than we actually love people. And that's a transformative thought that we always have to keep at the forefront of our minds when we're trying to figure out what's it look like to love one another. that you can have discussion and dialogue and you can have a respectful challenging of ideas within the context of relationship, but where the person knows that the relationship isn't at stake if you land differently on an issue. You know, so many people, many times, they make their way to my office and they sit down and usually out of, you know, complete desperation. They just don't care anymore. Somebody's got to know. Things are so fractured. Things are so broken. You know, the ugliness and the junk is forced to come out, or a situation or feelings have been forced to come out. And so they're just kind of desperate and they just kind of lay all the junk out. And there's something in them, and I see it happen over and over again, where they're anticipating that somehow their story, their struggle, their junk, their feelings somehow disqualify them from being a part of our community, that somehow disqualify them from grace and acceptance. And they're always surprised that when I always, you know, kick back with, hey, you need to know, you're normal for Crosspoint, you know? And they share their junk, and I'm like, I don't get into names of other people, but I'm like, let me give you a little bit of insight into some of the junk that I know is all sitting in our community, and then I can really shock you, you know, and I can really scare you with stuff that's all going on. And all of a sudden, it's such a great gift to be able to give people, hey, you know what? Your story, your situation, your struggle, your addiction, that doesn't scare me. Doesn't scare our church. We're not scared of your mess. Because we're all messy. Me too. We'll walk together. So you got to figure out, how do we make it safe? How do we make it safe? Lastly is, we've got to find ways to look for common ground. To look for common ground. You know, I used to kind of, the way I would interact with many people, especially that I would have differences with, is while I would listen to them, I would listen for something that I disagreed with, so that then I can construct an argument in my head of how to combat that. And so I would kind of tune them out after that, and all I'm doing is thinking through my rebuttal. And so how am I going to convince them that they're wrong and I'm right? And so I never really listened to people. I just, you know, once I heard something I disagreed with, now I'm just waiting for my chance to talk. But what I discovered was that never proved helpful, ever. Instead, came this moment where I started realizing, I had some other people that spoke into my life where I was like, you know what? Yeah, I'm going to try this approach. I'm going to, as I start to listen to people that maybe I feel on, that people that maybe are against me, they're anti me, what I believe, or, you know, Jesus that I'm pursuing, or whatever else. Now I'm going to start listening for, what can I agree with you on? How can I link arms with you in some way? And then out of that, let's start to have some common ground where we can have some type of discussion. Now we see the same type of thing in the scriptures. Look at Acts chapter 17, where you have Paul, and Paul is in, you know, this land of Greece and in Athens, and he's in this culture that they're worshiping all sorts of different gods and all sorts of different idols, and he's walking around and he's gets put in front of this group of thinkers and philosophers that are very much against the Jesus movement. And so they kind of put Paul up there and say, hey, go talk. And this is what Paul does. Verse 22, chapter 17, it says, Paul stood up in the meeting of the Areopagus and said, men of Athens, I see that in every way you are very religious. For as I walked around and looked carefully at your objects of worship, I even found an altar with this inscription, to an unknown God. Now what you worship is something unknown, I am going to proclaim to you. You notice what he did? Again, Paul. Here's Paul. You know, wrote the most of the New Testament. He didn't point fingers. He didn't condemn in the face of all this idolatry, all this different idol worship. Paul led with, hey, men at Athens, I can see you are very religious. I can see spiritual things matter to you a lot. And he found common ground. So what's it look like for you to do that with the people in your life? And one of the things that you have to always carry with you is you have to be able to discern between what feels good and what's actually helpful. Because many times what feels good is to correct. What feels good is to prove that you're right. What feels good is to kind of point fingers out and point out all the negative stuff. That feels good. But you have to discern between what feels good and what's actually helpful. It's actually helpful. You see, there's kind of this general underlying idea, and something I used to kind of believe, something we've probably even talked about here before, that if you want to change the world, it starts by loving people. But what we begin to discover is that if you really want to change the world, if you really want to do that, it doesn't start by loving people. It starts by loving a person. Because it's easy to embrace the idea of loving people generally, but it's much harder to actually love a person specifically. Because some people will proclaim their love for the world and proclaim their love for people of all cultures and backgrounds and beliefs, and they hold up that as this ideal in their life. But then they can carry with them all these ideas of loving people. They can go on missions, they can do all this kind of stuff and go serve all different types of groups of people. But then in a few weeks, they're going to get around a Thanksgiving table with their own family. And there's going to be somebody or a group of people they hold this spirit of contempt toward. Or they'll find themselves being completely apathetic toward the person who lives next door, to the person who works in the cubicle next to them. So you see, changing the world doesn't start with loving people. It starts with loving a person. And often it's the person that God has placed right in front of you. But at the same time, you need to also understand that that's not an excuse to ignore, you know, homeless people in Raleigh or in Durham, or to ignore people in Africa or Haiti and China in the name of, well, I'm only going to love the people that are right in front of me. Because if you're not careful, people living there become this category of people. People living in that situation become a category of people that's easy to dismiss. That's treating them generally. It's not treating them specifically. But an attitude of me too says, you know what? I may not know what it's like to live in a third world country. I may not know what it's like to live in a homeless situation. But what I do know is I know what it's like to be forgotten. I know what it's like to not be worth someone else's time or hassle. And so I'm going to find a way. I'm going to find some way to participate in loving you specifically and to loving a person specifically. So, kind of as we wrap this up, here's what I want all of us to understand. I want us to feel the weight of this, that every word we speak, every glance, every facial expression, every tone of our voice, every attitude, every hint of body language that we express, all of it has the power to give a little life to people or to destroy a little bit of people's spirit. That we all have this ability and this power that we carry with us to offer acceptance, love, and hope, and to put the spirit of Emmanuel on display. Or we also have the ability to judge and to condemn and to wound, to stand against and express the exact opposite heart of Jesus. But what I want you to know, I want you to know this as your pastor, that when I think about our church, and when I dream about our church, what God always brings to mind and what he always reminds me of is that in the scriptures, the people that were considered outsiders, the people that the religious systems of the day condemned and isolated, the people that were wounded and sick, and the people that were on the margins of society for whatever reason, those are the people who flocked to Jesus. Those are the people that ran to Jesus. Those are the people that hung out with Jesus and that Jesus hung out with them. And we, as the church, understand the scriptures make very clear. We are the body of Christ. We are the body of Jesus, both when we gather communally together and when we're apart and representing the body in all sorts of different aspects of our lives. We are the body of Jesus. And so, if that's how Jesus's life was marked by who flocked to him, it should be the same for us as his body today. But you got to understand, that doesn't happen. It doesn't happen when we choose to love people generally. It happens when we choose to love people specifically, even when it's hard, even when it's messy, even when it's confusing, even when it's costly. And that we would always be a church community where we don't beat people up as they search for answers along the way. That it's free for people and it's safe for people to search for answers without them getting beat up, where they can be them, they can be authentic, they can have their struggles and their junk and their feelings and all of it, and they can say, this is who I am. And they don't get beat up along the way. Where it's safe for someone to be gut level honest and say, you know what, I don't have it all together. Not by a long shot. And what they hear from us is me too. Me too. I want you to understand, it's one of the things that marks our church. It's one of the reasons I believe God uses it in tremendous ways to help contribute to life change stories in people's lives all the time. for people that had stopped listening a long time ago that start to listen again. It's because we try to live this out of what's it look like to constantly be saying, me too, me too. You know, I was having a conversation with a guy, just a few weeks ago, a month ago or so. And kind of started sharing with me a bunch of junk that he's going through, a bunch of junk that he's wrestling with, struggles that he has, how he's messed up pretty big time. And we kind of get to the end of it, and here's what he wanted to know. He said, am I going to be accepted in this community? Will you accept me? And so I said, I'm going to ask you one question. I said, are you at least open to the idea of what Jesus may have to say about life? If you want to walk with us and kind of journey with us, participate with us, are you at least open to the idea of what Jesus may have to say about life? Doesn't mean you have to agree with it. Doesn't mean you have to believe it. Doesn't mean you have to buy into it. Doesn't mean you have to change. Doesn't mean any of those kinds of things yet. All I'm asking you is, are you open to the idea of what Jesus may have to say about life? And he said, yeah. I said, me too. So let's go together. And let's figure it out. And let's journey together. Your junk doesn't scare me. Your mess doesn't scare me. If you're at least open to it, then let's go. Let's walk. And I want you to know, I hope. It may come out in different ways. It may come out in different phrases, different sentences, different types of conversations. That's a spirit that always marks. It always has, and hope that it always will continue to be a mark of this community and how we live out both together and individually the way of Jesus. We'll close with this. Colossians chapter 3. Paul writes, therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved, clothe yourselves with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. Bear with each other and forgive whatever grievances you may have against one another. Forgive as the Lord forgave you. And over all these virtues, put on love, which binds them all together in perfect unity. So may we be a community over all the virtues that we carry and over all the virtues that we put on. May we put on love. Peace be with you. We'll see you next week.